You are listening to Book Clips, a mini podcast in which authors or narrators do readings from novels. Check out the show notes for the synopsis and buy links for this book.
Coming to Terms, written by K.A. Moll, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1. Amber heard the hum of hushed whispers, moving desks and scooting chairs in her normally quiet and orderly classroom. Somewhere, deep inside her mind, she knew what to do to regain control. She was a master teacher, for God's sake. This was simple classroom management.
"What's up with her?" one kid whispered to another. "Look, the way she's twisting at her hair."
"I know. Weird, right?"
He tucked a long, slightly greasy strand of hair behind his ear.
"Look at her expression. Friggin' wild. Scary."
He swallowed and spoke up.
"Miss James?"
Amber gaped into the wide eyes of her students.
"Shh," she said.
"He's listening to us." She was petrified and wanted to scream. She didn't dare. "We have to be quiet." She crouched down below desk level. "He can hurt us. He's done it before. Shh, we have to hide." A kid in the front row spoke up.
"Who can hurt us, Miss James?"
"Shh," Amber said. "He can, and he's coming. Now."
Bzzzt.
She galloped like a wild filly to the rear of her classroom. "We have to run." The long-haired kid leaned over again.
"That's it. We need help."
He nodded toward the door.
"You keep her talking while I slip out."
Sawyer tipped back in her leather chair, a victim statement in one hand and her second cup of steaming black coffee in the other. She was in a couple hours ahead of schedule, trying to review statements and consider evidence, while the usually chaotic bullpen was still quiet. Soon the other detectives would trickle in, and it would be all over. She took another sip of coffee, adjusted her Glock 9mm shoulder holster, and reached into the cardboard box for her second chocolate-glazed donut. Sawyer loved everything about being a cop. She thrived on it, solving the crimes, incarcerating the criminals, and that intoxicating rush of adrenaline that always accompanied danger. This job was who she was. She did it well, and it was all she had. She had the intellect and edge of a great detective, which is the main reason that all the nightmare cases gravitated to her load. She growled with each new assignment, but the growls were a smokescreen. Sawyer loved the heavy load, loved the challenge. It kept her mind engaged enough to stay sober, at least during the workday. This case was complicated, probably the most complex of her career. It was the reason Sawyer was in so early. She had to figure out how all the pieces fit together, and she had to do it quick. The attacks were increasing in frequency and severity. It was only a matter of time before rape led to murder. She had to catch him, the rapist, before that happened. Sawyer dropped her forehead into her palm to think, just as the phone on the corner of her desk rang. It snapped her to her senses, and she answered.
"Detective James," Sawyer said as she brushed donut crumbs from the front of her freshly pressed blue trousers. The caller was the principal at Tampa High.
"A nervous breakdown? Amber?"
Her breathing quickened.
"You called an ambulance?"
She flew forward in her chair.
"Oh my God, I'm on my way."
Sawyer hung up and darted out the door. It was 65 minutes from Sarasota to Tampa General, unless she ran with lights and siren, which of course she did. She squealed into an emergency vehicle parking space in less than 45, right on time. She'd been monitoring the communications between Amber's ambulance and the hospital on her police radio and knew it should have just arrived. Sawyer shoved her keys into her pocket and ran. She was scared breathless by the time she skidded to a halt at the rear of the vehicle. Her heartbeat was wild in her chest. It was a struggle to hold it together, but she did. At least until the paramedic opened the rear door of the ambulance and she caught a glimpse of the straps that held Amber to the gurney. With clenched fists, she catapulted over the edge.
"What the hell?"
Her eyes glared fury.
"You get those fucking straps off my sister!"
Spit splattered in the paramedic's face. She looked up, but didn't remove the straps or engage Sawyer. Amber surged. She twisted, struggled, and jerked frantically against all her restraints, until one loosened. As quick as a flash of lightning, she had a grip on the paramedic's waistband. The woman gently pried her fingers loose, and her partner resecured the strap.
"Your sister was swinging and clawing like that when we got to the school this morning," the paramedic said. "She had those school folks scared half to death."
The woman met Sawyer's gaze.
"We had to strap her down for everyone's safety."
She gave the gurney strap an extra tug.
"Don't worry, they'll give her something pretty soon. It'll settle her right down."
Sawyer looked away from the paramedic, trying to hold on to her sister's gaze. Amber's wild frenzy, most likely psychosis, made her look so much older than her 35 years. They were identical twins, and yet at this moment, Amber didn't even look like Sawyer's distant relative. She was virtually unrecognizable to her, even though she'd seen her just yesterday. A wave of nausea overtook Sawyer as she flashed back to all they'd been through together. Their secret. Their shared experience.
"Shh, you're okay,"
Sawyer choked as she reached to brush away a wisp of tangled hair. Amber screamed the scream of an injured animal caught in a trap. Sawyer jumped back. Amber's eyes widened. Her face contorted unnaturally, and she began to froth at the mouth. She grunted and squealed the squeals of a wild boar. Chills shot down Sawyer's spine. Her teeth chattered. She clenched her jaw to still them and met the paramedic's gaze.
"Please help her."
The paramedic responded and whisked Amber away.
"Good luck,"
she said with a nod to Sawyer. Sawyer watched the gurney zip down the hallway and into an exam room. She started to follow, but didn't. Instead, she headed for the ER admitting desk to provide the required information. It was a necessary nuisance. Afterward, she reluctantly took a seat. Knots squeezed the contents of her stomach into her throat by the spoonful as she waited. Eventually, the striking redhead appeared and extended her hand.
"Sage Carson, I'm a social worker on the psychiatric unit. I'll be Amber's therapist while she's here."
Sawyer shook the offered hand and held on. By that point, both barrels were loaded and ready.
"Well, it's about time. Do you realize that I've been sitting here for well over an hour without a single update?"
Others in the waiting room turned their heads and took notice. Sawyer glared.
"Do you people not get that part of your job is to communicate with family?"
She dropped the social worker's hand.
"You're all fucking incompetent."
Sage locked eyes with the obnoxious family member.
"Please lower your voice. I do apologize for the length of your wait. However, our first responsibility is to our patient, and she kept us fully occupied this past hour. I came with an update as soon as I could."
Sage took a breath and tried to control her temper.
"It's important to remember that this is not about you. It's about your sister."
She turned to head down the corridor.
"Now, if you'll come with me, I'll take you to see Amber's psychiatrist."
"Lead the way,"
Sawyer said as she ran her fingers through her hair.
"I'm right behind you."
Sawyer twiddled with her smartphone in one hand and drummed the glass-topped table with the other. Waiting again. Finally, a soft knock and the door opened. She watched without a word as the squinty-eyed man in his late 40s and the attractive redhead laid their manila folders on the table and sat down. Her volley of questions and list of demands launched like torpedoes.
"Your sister is resting comfortably,"
Dr. Perry said.
"But only with the aid of a potent tranquilizer. She'll need a thorough medical examination, a psychiatric evaluation, and, of course, hospitalization. It may take days or weeks for us to make progress. You'll need to be patient."
Sawyer felt a vein twitch in her neck. Fear and anger consumed her. Self-control slipped through her grasp. What a condescending bastard! She broke into a sweat.
"My sister's not crazy."
She glared at the psychiatrist and then Sage.
"Amber's smart, witty, and totally sane. If you people are trying to say she's schizophrenic, you're the ones who are crazy."
Sage scooted closer and gently laid her hand on Sawyer's arm.
At this point, we're not trying to say anything other than we need to do a workup for possible schizophrenia. We're doing that because Amber's symptoms would be consistent with that diagnosis. She saw terror flicker in Sawyer's cobalt blue eyes and felt an urge to ease her fears. Schizophrenia is just one possibility. We'll know better what we're dealing with in a few days. Let's not place our total focus on worst-case scenarios. There are many less serious conditions that could explain your sister's current symptoms.
I want to see her, Sawyer demanded.
Sage shook her head slowly. We can't allow you to do that right now. Ember's fearful of virtually everyone, including you. We need to give her some time and space to calm down and let her medications take effect. She pursed her lips. I'm very sorry, but you'll just have to wait until she's ready. Sawyer clenched her fists.
You people can't stop me from seeing my sister. I'm her medical power of attorney, for God's sake.
I'm afraid we can, if it's in her best interest, Sage said as she gazed into the defiant eyes. I'm sorry, but we can. Sawyer shoved back and her chair almost took a tumble.
Well then, I guess I just won't admit her.
Sage stood and again met her gaze. I'm sorry, but that's not something that you have control of at this point either. Amber's been assessed to be a danger to herself and possibly others. It's our responsibility to assure her safety as well as those she might come in contact with.
Fine!
Sawyer spun and flung open the door. Once she'd exited the building, she broke into a run.
They're identical twins?
Dr. Perry asked in disbelief. Sawyer's manner and style had thrown Sage off, too. She'd checked the record just to be sure. It's hard to believe, but they are.
If we are dealing with schizophrenia, Detective James will be at a significantly higher risk for developing the disorder,
Dr. Perry said.
You'll need to address that issue with her during your sessions.
Yes, Doctor, Sage said with a shake of her head. That is, if she'll meet with me. Her eyes widened. The detective is quite volatile. Dr. Perry picked up his folder.
Then let's hope that she does.
Sage was exhausted by the end of her day. It seemed like all she'd done was run between new admissions and fires on the unit. She dropped into the bucket seat of her blue Mustang just a few minutes after 5 o'clock, cranked her radio loud enough to rumble the dash, and did what she always did on a Wednesday night. She headed for Sarasota to have dinner with her parents. The difference between her drive to Sarasota this evening and all the others was that she couldn't seem to get the angry detective with the short brown hair and intense blue eyes out of her mind. Sawyer jerked the driver's door of her cruiser open and flopped onto the firm leather seat. She was pissed off. It had been an unproductive day during which she'd felt almost totally out of control. She jammed down the accelerator and backed with a squeal out of her reserved space in the Sarasota PD parking lot. The cruiser just naturally headed for one of the few places that she felt comfortable.
Hey there, Esty,
the bartender called out as the bell on the front door announced the new arrival.
You aren't usually in here on Wednesdays.
Hey there, Butch, Sawyer sighed as she slumped onto her favorite bar stool. No, not usually, but my sister's not available for dinner tonight, so here I am. She flashed a sham of a grin and laid the first of several $5 bills on the counter. Give me the usual.
Miller Lite with a lemon-lime twist coming right up,
Butch called out as he popped the top on the bottle and slid a bowl of freshly cut lemon and lime slices down the worn mahogany bar. Sawyer squeezed several slices into her beer and took a quick swig. She closed her eyes and enjoyed the sensation of the ice-cold beer as it slid down her throat. Then she tipped the bottle back and chug-a-lugged the rest.
Mmm, that was good. I think it calls for another.
She knew a row of empties would be lined up in front of her before she'd call it a night. Chapter 2 Sage was thankful to have been blessed with wonderful parents. She tried never to take their unconditional love and support for granted. Bob and Jenny Carson had raised her to be a kind and responsible daughter,
They'd cared for her grandparents, and now it was her privilege to care for them.
So, you never did tell me what you think about your daddy's condition, Jenny said the moment her husband shuffled into the next room. You being a clinical social worker and all, I know you know a lot more about this than you're letting on.
She gazed into her daughter's eyes.
I'm already worried, sweetie. Just tell me what you think we're up against.
Sage's eyes filled with love and tears. I think Daddy's getting more confused, and his short-term memory is almost gone. She heard her words and felt a catch of emotion in the back of her throat.
It's almost gone, and he's already on the strongest dosage of medication the doctor can give him. There's nothing more that can be done for him beyond that, which means that it's only a matter of time before he gets a lot worse. You're doing a good job taking care of him now, but I think you need help. You look tired, Mama, and I'm worried about you, too.
Sage stroked her mom's cheek.
I could help you arrange respite if you want.
Not yet, Jenny choked as she looked into her only child's eyes. Soon, maybe, but not yet. We're just not ready.
Sage nodded. Okay, whatever you say. I trust you to know when it's time.
She fought back insistent tears. Alzheimer's is an awful disease, as hard on caregivers as it is the patient. Please don't wait until Daddy's disease makes you sick, too.
Jenny jumped up.
I'd better see where your daddy's gotten to. Lately, he's been getting lost on his way back from the bathroom.
She ran down the hall. Sage heard her mom locate her dad in the back bedroom.
You need any help? She called out.
No, Jenny said as she led her husband back into the living room. I've got him. We're fine.
Sage looked up and smiled.
Hi, Daddy.
She patted the seat of a second chair at the card table.
How about you come sit with me? We can work on a jigsaw puzzle.
Bob Carson's kind brown eyes looked into his daughter's, first with confusion, then with a spark of recognition.
Okay, honey.
He smiled a warm but distant smile.
I like jigsaw puzzles.
Sage hugged his neck.
I know you do, Daddy.
She enjoyed their Wednesday night 100-piece puzzle. It was one of very few activities that her dad could still almost do on his own. After they'd finished, she kissed the top of his balding head and announced that it was time for her to head back to Tampa. She grabbed her purse, kissed her mom, and headed for the door.
See you guys next Wednesday.
She met her mom's eye and paused.
Unless you need me sooner.
I love you both.
We love you too, Jenny said as she followed her daughter to the porch. Drive carefully and call us when you get home.
I will,
Sage said as she tossed her purse into the passenger seat. She waved one more time, turned on her music, and headed for the interstate. By the time she entered the ramp, she was lost in thought about her life, her failed marriage, her parents. And for some strange reason, those gorgeous blue eyes that had stared her down. Sawyer stumbled onto the elevator. She leaned against the wall and rode up to the third floor of her building. The doors opened and she stepped off, dizzy. She leaned again until she felt steady enough to resume a forward stagger down the hall that led to her two-bedroom condo. Snoop met her at the door.
Such a good boy,
she slurred as she patted the head of her big German Shepherd. At one time, he'd been her partner on the K-9 narcotics unit, the best partner she'd ever had. After he was injured and retired from active duty, she'd transferred off the unit. It just wasn't the same without him.
Sorry, big guy, but you have to wait until I can see straight before you get your supper. I've had a few too many again.
She shook her head in disgust.
This is it, though. No more. Starting tonight, I'm turning over a new leaf.
She made it to the living room couch and collapsed. Snoop dropped to the floor beside her. The worn leather felt soft against her skin. That, combined with her current level of intoxication, knocked her out. After several hours, Sawyer stirred to Snoop's cold nose nudging her hand. She sat up and dropped back down. A splintering headache had come out of nowhere. Her brain was exploding. She pressed her thumbs deep into her temples. It didn't help. Snoop nosed her again.
Okay. Just a minute. I'm getting up. Just give me a minute.
Finally, Sawyer stood on sea legs and stumbled toward the kitchen. She reached for the can of Alpo on the shelf, opened it, and plopped the cylindrical chunk into the bowl. The dog food smell made her nauseous, and she hurried to the toilet to throw up. It was sunrise before Sawyer awoke in bed, still hungover. She squinted and tried to see the digital clock on her nightstand, but her eyes refused to focus. She swung her legs over the side of the bed and stumbled to the shower. The steaming hot spray felt good, but it didn't solve her biggest problem. The damn headache. Snoop sat outside the bathroom door. It had become his morning ritual to watch his master dress. Sawyer knew he was disappointed that he couldn't go.
Sorry, buddy. You have to stay home and guard the house. I'm headed up to Tampa today, and it's too hot to leave you in the car.
She pulled on her blue trousers, buckled her belt, and slid her Glock 9mm into her shoulder holster. With a finger combing of her dark hair and a scratch of the dog's big ears, she was on her way.
See you tonight. You be a good boy.
Sawyer paced as she checked her smartphone for messages. Waiting again. What a pain in the ass.
Come on, Miss Carson, get to work.
She'd arrived at the hospital early in hopes of seeing Amber before her shift started. If the social worker didn't get here soon, that wasn't going to happen.
Come on, some of us don't have all day.
As if on cue, Sage came around the corner.
Well, good morning, detective. You're here bright and early.
Morning, Sawyer growled. I want to see Amber.
Sage pursed her lips and inhaled. She may or may not be able to receive visitors yet. She unlocked her office door. Have a seat if you want. I'll check on her and be right back. Sage looked into Sawyer's eyes.
Don't get your hopes up.
Sawyer considered sitting down, but couldn't. The blood pounding inside her head was too loud. Instead, she paced in and out of the doorway. After a few minutes, she reached for her smartphone. Distraction was her best hope of maintaining control. 5 minutes turned into 25 before she spotted Sage come back around the corner. Her expression was clear. She had no intention of allowing a visit. Sawyer clenched her fists and jaw.
I see you're upset, Sage said. Come in, I'll fix us a cup of coffee and we'll talk.
Sawyer positioned herself, angry and defiant, by the door.
No thanks.
You want to see your sister this morning, Sage said softly.
I get that.
Amber's just not ready for visitors yet. I'm sorry, but she's just not. She's my patient, and I have to put her needs first. Be angry at me if you must, but I just can't let you see her, not today.
Their gazes locked.
I cannot set Amber up to lose ground just to please you.
Sawyer stepped inside the door. She immediately felt confined, like a wild colt must feel after being tied to a hitching post. Panic gripped her, and she began to pace.
When? If not today, when?
Soon, but I can't tell you exactly when. Hopefully, we'll get Amber more grounded in reality as we titrate her medication levels. She's still immersed in the terror of her psychosis and very fragile. We have to protect her. You want her safe and protected, too. I know you do. Why don't we just agree to work together to help her? You might find that approach to be more helpful to Amber and a lot less stressful for you.
Sawyer blew out her breath.
I do want her safe and protected.
Sage smiled. I know you do.
We need you to help us so that we can help Amber, Sage said softly.
Do you think you could meet with me a few mornings this next week? Maybe help me get to know who your sister was before the psychosis? We need to figure out what triggered Amber's psychotic break. Once we do, we'll be able to work together to help her find her path back to reality.
Sawyer began to pace again. This time, her hands were fisted tightly in her pockets. A couple beads of sweat trickled down her face.
I can do that. When?
How about I come in a bit early for a few days? That way, our meetings won't interfere so much with your work schedule. Would 7 o'clock work?
Yeah, that's good,
Sawyer said with a turn toward the door.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Sage leaned onto her elbow and propped her head in her palm. She had a lot to think about, personally and professionally. Never before had she fought so hard to keep professional distance, to maintain control. From the moment she saw Sawyer trembling in her doorway, she had an overwhelming urge to hold her. God, they were both so fragile. Amber might be her patient, but Sage knew without a doubt that she'd have to help them both. It was a most unproductive workday, and Sage was glad when it was finally over. All she wanted, no, needed, was to slip into her riding clothes, hop on her bike, and ride. Every therapist needs a therapist. The bike was hers, and she had a serious need for therapy time. At almost 40, Sage had been taken aback by a tidal wave of new and unsettling feelings. Her stomach fluttered like it did during her first junior high crush. She planned to pedal until she understood how the obnoxious detective, a woman no less, had not only caught her eye, but also had stolen her heart. The crushed shells crackled between the rows of coconut palms as the white cruiser came to a stop in front of trailer number 5. It was one of the oldest trailers in the park, but well-maintained. Sawyer knew she couldn't go to the bar 2 nights in a row, and this was as good a place as any. She'd be with people she cared about, people who cared about her. It's funny how years can make such a difference.
Hey there, good-looking,
the sexy blonde called out through her front screen door.
What brings you over our way?
Lori assumed her most provocative stance.
I'll bet you came to see me.
Sawyer grinned.
Watch it now. You're going to get us in trouble again.
Aw, Joe don't care,
Lori said, loud enough to be heard inside the trailer.
Do you, baby?
I'm used to it after 10 years,
Joe said as she stepped onto the porch. She nodded to Sawyer.
Hey there, Esty. Want a beer?
Lori glared. Her partner paid her no attention.
Love one, Sawyer said. How'd you know? Just a lucky guess,
Joe called out as she headed back inside. Sawyer cruised Lori's skimpy attire with her eyes. Her full breasts and round ass always did command full attention.
You're as beautiful as ever.
Lori adjusted her stance and short shorts with a wink.
Even at 55 with all my wrinkles, huh?
She gave her bikini top a tug.
I'll bet you say that to all your ex-girlfriends.
Sawyer shook her head.
Now, you know there aren't any other ex-girlfriends. You were my first and only.
Her smile was tender as she brushed Lori's cheek.
You know you'll always be special to me.
Sawyer caught a whiff of cigarette smoke as Joe stepped onto the porch.
Here you go,
she said with a toss of an unopened bottle of Miller Lite. Joe's gaze turned to Lori.
Did I give you two enough time? If not, I can go back inside and let you finish up. That's enough, Sawyer said. It's not as funny as it used to be.
Joe grinned and slapped Sawyer's back.
Just kidding, pal. I know you two wouldn't mess around right under my nose.
Sawyer pinned the smartass to the wall with her eyes.
And you know we haven't been together in over a decade.
Joe shook her head and laughed.
Drink your beer. I'll throw 3 steaks on the grill.
It was a fun evening, except for Joe's smart remarks and her constant scowl. She always managed to dampen a good time, especially if it looked like Sawyer was relaxed and having fun.
It's been good, Sawyer said, but I need to be on my way.
She stood and headed for the door.
Thanks for the hospitality.
Lori got up to walk her out.
I know you came for a reason. You don't just socialize, and you never stop by unannounced.
She met Sawyer's beautiful blue eyes.
Sometimes I think I know you better than you know yourself. What's wrong, honey?
Sawyer shook her head.
It's nothing. I just needed to be with people tonight, and you guys are my people. Kinda sad, isn't it? The woman I dumped 15 years ago, her partner, and my sister are my only people.
Lori touched Sawyer's cheek.
Aw, sweetie, you were just a 21-year-old baby back then. You didn't know what you were throwing away.
She winked.
Now you do, and that's all that matters to me.
She straightened Sawyer's collar.
How about you take me to lunch one of these days? I've been itching to try that Mexican restaurant, the new one over on University. Joe won't go, but I'll bet you will.
Uh-huh, Sawyer said. You know my weakness, and you use it against me.
She smiled.
Sure, I'd love to take you to lunch.
Her brow furrowed in concern.
You sure Joe won't mind?
Lori made a face.
No, way. She'll be fine with it.
I'm not so sure you're being totally honest with me about that, Sawyer said. Or with yourself, for that matter.
Lori knew she wasn't either, but didn't care. She rose up to kiss Sawyer on her cheek.
It'll be fine. We're just friends now, and Joe knows it.
Sawyer met her ex's gaze. You do know that we're going to lunch because you think I need to talk, right?
I know, Lori said with a smile. But I care about you. That's okay, isn't it?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm glad we made it through our rough patch.
Sawyer brushed a lock of hair from Lori's eyes.
Yeah, me too, Lori said. And Sawyer, whatever it is, it's not as bad as you think. It'll be okay. You're strong and you'll get through it.
You know me too well, Sawyer said as she dropped into her cruiser.
Lori touched her arm.
Yeah, sweetie, I do.
She watched until Sawyer was out of sight and then went back inside.
Esty seemed different tonight, Joe said as she wiped down the yellowing laminate kitchen counter. Preoccupied or something.
She looked up to meet Lori's eye.
So, is dropping by unannounced going to become a regular thing with her now, or what?
Lori assumed her perturbed stance and expression.
No, tonight was different. She's got some kind of problem right now. Even you know that she's got to be really troubled before she seeks out companionship. Sawyer always thinks she's got her shit hidden under that shell of hers, but she doesn't. I can see right through it.
Oh, yeah, Joe said with a hint of sarcasm. You see right through it, don't you, baby?
Lori loaded the last glass into the dishwasher, a luxury that many of her neighbors didn't have.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know, Joe said. You figure it out.
Sawyer's taking me to lunch next week so we can talk about whatever's going on.
Lori pushed the button to start the wash cycle.
Of course she is, Joe snarled. I'm sure she'll talk really well when you two are all alone in some secluded corner of a nice restaurant.
She threw her rag into the sink.
I don't get how you can still be around her after the way she treated you when you guys broke up. She beat you up, for God's sake. Treated you like a piece of garbage. Now you rub all over her like a cat in heat. It makes me sick to my stomach.
I do not, Lori sneered. We're just friends.
Joel rolled her eyes.
Yeah, right.
Lori added a plate and slammed the door hard enough to rattle glasses.
SD got mean back then because she was scared. I understood that then, and I understand it now. She was just a scared kid when we were together. I forgave her, and we moved on. That's all there is to it.
Well, I guess it's just lucky for me that she got tired of you,
Joe said as she yanked Lori into her arms and began to roughly feel her up. She squeezed Lori's breasts and grabbed her crotch.
I'm so lucky I got her sloppy seconds.
Lori pushed away. Her upper lip curled in disgust.
You're drunk, Joe. Get your hands off me.
I thought you liked drunks,
Joe said as she grabbed another bottle of beer from the refrigerator. She twisted off the cap and headed for the door. It slammed as she stepped onto the porch. Lori didn't follow. It was good to have some peace and quiet.
Coming to Terms, written by K.A. Moll, narrated by Emily Beresford.
You have been listening to Book Clips. Check out the show notes for the synopsis and buy links for this book. If you are interested in showcasing your novel, then check out the show notes for more information.